Welcome to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. My name is Lauren Wells, here with my co-host, Chris Seveny. We're committed to providing you with the knowledge required to build wealth through real estate investing. Tired of consuming content about real estate? Stuck in analysis paralysis? Ready to do your first deal? As a member of our community, you will learn how to go from consuming content to taking that first step into the world of real estate investing. Our show is not about getting rich quick, but about providing you with the knowledge you need to take action. Join us as we speak with experienced investors who share action tips on how to escape the corporate world, start a thriving side hustle in the world of real estate, and go beyond your W-2 or 401k.
Welcome, everybody, to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast, the podcast that empowers you to take control of your financial future, diversify your income, and achieve the financial freedom you deserve. If you are tired of the stock market's roller coaster ride and seeking a more stable and predictable way to build your future wealth, then you are in the right place. I'm your co-host, Chris Seveny, and today I'm going to nerd out again and do a little bit of a market analysis, market update for what we were seeing, talk about the month of April, what we saw within our mortgage note fund, what we see out in the financial world as being a note investor and having a note fund. We are typically on the front line to see what banks and institutions are doing. So today I wanted to give you a market update, talk about how that impacts our business. So please stay till the end because this is a question we get asked a lot is how does the current markets impact our current business? And talk a little bit about the Fed's raising interest rates today, up another quarter point. But we'll talk all about that. So let's dive in. So first, let's talk about the month of April. And the month of April was a very interesting month for us. It was our best month ever in regards to acquisitions. We basically closed or in the process of closing on a little over $1.5 million in loans just in the month of April. But the product and the information that we saw that was on the market for April was very interesting for what we were seeing. We saw more product in April than we had seen the entire quarter one of 2023, which the beginning of the year was similar to the last quarter of last year, but the first month saw more product than we saw the prior quarter. So we are definitely seeing a lot more assets come on the market. And next thing is, once you start seeing more assets, let's talk about pricing for those assets. And pricing starting to creep down. And when you look at why it's creeping down, because investors are looking for a little higher return on those assets. A year ago, when interest rates were significantly lower, people weren't discounting as much to achieve specific rates that were above what the Fed's and what they could get, the risk-free rate of return, as people may say. But times have changed and times are a-changing. So give you a kind of, I'll run some numbers down for those who are in-depth in the space, but also kind of let people know how we track and what we track. For example, in the month of April, from one seller alone, we saw over $200 million of product. A lot of the product they put out actually did not trade because the bids were maybe the sellers expected. And as we're going through some of this correction right now, there's a little bit of a disconnect between sellers' expectations and buyers' expectations. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. But the different types of loans that we see, for example, there was a non-performing loan pool that was a little over about $5 million, and it didn't trade. The seller's expectations were wanting somewhere in the above 80% on those loans, and it didn't trade because of that, and pricing is consistently coming down on those assets, even on the ones in equity. A large number of loans we've seen were what's called bridge finance, which is short-term financing. A lot of times it's for investors, for people who are looking to churn cash pretty fast. That had about $14 million in loans that came across our plate. The average interest rate, or what's the weighted average coupon is a term that's used, which is the average rate across them, was about 11%. And that sold at a slight discount that would yield about a 12% return approximately for those types of investors. That's interesting because people did pay close to par, which is close to what the value is on paper. But what's interesting about that is a year ago, that would have traded for 105% or a higher percentage because a year ago, investors were happy with an 8-9% return or even lower that were buying a lot of this type of paper. So they would bid around that number, where today, again, with interest rates rising, costs of capital getting more expensive, people are trying to nudge up a little bit there. Big chunk was non-QM loans and scratch and dent loans. So let me explain first what a scratch and dent loan is. And this is interesting because we'll talk about it a little more along with kind of the banks. For people who want to understand the mortgage space, here's a high level of a lot of institutions, whether they're banks or lenders, they will originate a loan. They'll collect fees based on points is fee that they'll collect. And a lot of times they'll securitize the loan and sell it to Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, which is a government-sponsored entity, will buy those loans. So a lot of these lenders that are non-banks are originating loans to then turn around and sell, and they're like middlemen. They're creating the loan, but they're pushing it aside. Scratch and dent loans are those that have a defect, so they could not go to be sold to Fannie or Freddie. And we're seeing a lot of loans that were originated a year ago at 3, 4, 5%. To give you an idea, the weighted average coupon of over $70 million of loans was 4.5%, which you can't touch that rate today. So now these institutions that have these, they couldn't sell them to the government. Now all of a sudden it's like, oh boy, I got to sell these and get them off our books. A year ago, this loan of 4.5% loan probably would have sold for about 95 cents on the dollar. Now, where are they averaging? They're averaging in the mid-70s, give people an idea. So that's a 20% discount from where they were. For us, that's still higher than something we'd want to pay on those types of loans. But what that's showing is some softening in the market on pricing because it's finally people are adjusting to today's current interest rates. So I wanted to kind of share that with people a little bit and why it's important to understand and for us to show people we track a lot of this data because we want to know what is trending. So I think it's very important for people to understand. And one last thing I'll mention, we're 3 days into May and we've already seen over $100 million of assets come across our plate for sale. Again, seeing a lot of that scratch and dent style loans, and also starting to see a mix of other types of loan as well. For those who know us, our primary focus is on the non-performing space, which we, you know, take a look at all these assets. But just because we may not be buying certain assets, we follow the markets closely so we understand everything that's going on in the market. Pivot a little bit right now, where I felt like I was diving really deep into weeds and kind of sharing some of that data with people. Let's peel it back. Let's talk about big picture on what's going on. First thing I want to talk about is what's going on in the banking industry. And we just had First Republic, another bank, go under. And this is the fourth bank that has gone under in the recent past. And let's put a little things in perspective. 2008, people were around investing in real estate. Those were pretty rough times. There were 25 banks that went under in 2008. The banks that went under, which were much smaller, they accounted for about $350 billion in assets. The four banks that have gone under recently account for $550 billion in assets. So from a numbers perspective, the number of banks is significantly lower, but the amount of money that has been out the door is significantly higher. Now, I will state there's a lot more money in the financial system today than there was 15 years ago. So you have to play that into account. But I just want to make a point that $550 billion, it's a lot of money. So what happens when these banks go under? Now you hear JP Morgan Chase or somebody comes in and buys them. And part of this process, the FDIC, federal, steps in as well. That's who insures the first $250,000 in your bank account. They'll come in and they'll also assist in liquidating the assets of the bank. And for example, FDIC has reached out to BlackRock, who they did 15 years ago, liquidate and sell off these assets. Now, a lot of these assets are originated, they're loans typically that were originated at very low rates. So similar to some of the numbers I was just sharing with you, right now, if you ask the experts, which by no means am I an expert in any of these topics, they expect probably about a 30% haircut across these assets, which that's significant. But when you start looking at dollars, and this is where I think people need to start paying a little more attention to certain things. 30% haircut, maybe a little less, say 25% on $550 billion of assets that are going to come out. It's about $125 billion of losses, which are going to be covered by the FDIC. So the FDIC is covering a lot of these losses. The FDIC on their balance sheet has roughly $125 billion, which they've been saving up the last 15 years or however long they've been saving all this money. Well, that then begs a question. The FDIC has to take all of their reserves to pay just these first four banks. They're basically FDIC's insolvent. So as a individual who thinks they understand a little bit about finance, I have money in bank accounts. But my question that pops in my head is, how is the FDIC going to insure my money in the bank if they don't have any money? Typically, they get it from fees from banks. But if they all of a sudden they have to start charging fees to these banks, it's going to be exorbitant, I would have to imagine. Where do you think the banks are going to get those fees? They're not going to take it out of their profits. We know that. So come back and charge your consumer.
We hope you're enjoying this episode of Creating Wealth Simplified. We wanted to take a moment and tell you more about our passive income fund at 7E, which is open to both accredited and non-accredited investors. Our latest offering targets an 8% annual return distributed monthly, with the ability to potentially achieve a greater return through our bonus share program. If you'd like more information, reach out to us at invest@7einvestments.com to learn more. Thank you.
The other area, which is probably going to happen, is the government's going to step in, and the government steps in. Now, where are they going to get the money? Well, they get it from taxpayers. So either way, most likely, as in taxpayer, probably going to lose. But something to pay attention to, because I think it is going to have a significant impact down the line of how banks and bank failures are going to be treated if more banks continue to go under. And now that begs a question, do we think more banks will go under? Again, I am not an economist or micro level, but typically when things start to sour, there's a first wave, things kind of get a little sturdier, and then a second wave typically follows. So with interest rates also rising again in the current interest rate environment, I do think there'll be another wave of some bank failures, simply because a lot of these banks, which may have been mismanaged, I'm not going to get into how they're managed because I'm not involved in their day-to-day, but if they have a lot of assets on their books that were originated at 3 and 4%, and the market today is saying it's 6 or 7%, and they need cash, they're going to have to liquidate something, and it's going to have to be those assets, which will have to sell at a discount, which will take from their profits. And this was a good education experience for us because we have to submit audited financials to the SEC, which we do every year. And when we go through our audits, first question they ask us is, are your loans held to maturity or are they held for sale? And we model our loans as held for sale. And the difference between held to maturity, which is what banks typically do, and held for sale is how you value that asset. So think of a hold to maturity is you have a loan and it's worth that value for its life. So let's throw in real estate, for example. You buy a $250,000 house. On the books, it's worth $250,000 today. And in 5 years from now, whether or not the house has gone up in price or not, that's what banks are doing. So as rates have increased, that $100,000 loan at 3%, even though if they had to go sell that thing and say they sold it for $90,000, on their books and balance sheet, it's still showing as $100,000 because they anticipate they'll have to hold a maturity. Held for sale, which is what we do, is every year we have to value that loan. So we will come up with a new value for that loan dependent upon market conditions, market pricing. If it's gone from performing to non-performing, the value may go down. If it's gone from non-performing to performing, value may go up. But it's an actual snapshot of if you know what hit the fan and everything had to sell, we have a very good idea what it's worth compared to these institutions that hold things to maturity. The price is based off of that face value. If it was an 8% loan or a 3% loan, it's based off of what it was at that time, which of course those would have two different values if they were to hit the marketplace. So with that, really want to kind of mention that a little bit because this is why, and I mentioned on a prior podcast, that we're starting to see some of these institutions get in trouble. And I've mentioned on the last podcast as well, why I think we'll see more distressed debt on the market is because if they have performing bonds or loans at low interest and they have non-performing loans, they're going to want to liquidate those non-performing loans because they have to move those over to the balance sheet anyways to liquidate them versus putting them, selling something else and holding that debt, which they are not their primary focus, is what I want to say, is banks are not in the business to hold real estate assets. The other kind of macro thing we're starting to see recently is starting to see loans that are in lines of credit, which is you buy a house for $200,000, it was worth $250,000, and then over time it appreciates, which most real estate has appreciated over the last 5 years. Now the house is worth $400,000. So instead of getting a whole new first loan that's at a low interest rate, they can go to a bank and say, hey, I want a line of credit, which is a loan they can borrow against that equity in their house, typically up to, say, 80%. What's happened during COVID is what we're seeing is a lot of loans, these lines of credit were taking out, and they're used to pay credit card debt during that time because as rates started to go up, credit card rates, of course, started to go up. But people were basically, instead of paying the 18% or 16%, 20% credit card, they're taking a line of credit at 5% to pay off, and over 10 years, pay down that credit card debt to lower their payments, which seems like a good idea because you're just borrowing money at 5% to pay off that credit cards so you can lower and start saving more money. But what do you think happened? A lot of instances we are seeing on the distress side. They went and got that line of credit, but they went and now racked up more credit card debt. And over the last 6 months, as federal rate has increased, the Fed rate, which doesn't necessarily technically correlate with interest rates, that's on 10-year treasuries, but we're not going to go down that path, when the interest rates on credit cards typically are more correlated. So people have gone out and spent that credit card money again, and now the rates on the credit cards have gone up. A lot of these lines of credits also have variable rates to them, so those are also increasing. Now they're going back to the banks because they still have some extra equity, try and pull some of that money out. And one of the banks saying, nope, we're good, we're done, because banks everywhere are tightening their belts. Lending is getting much more difficult to get today than it was a year or two ago. So just people think about that for a second. If you're needing to get a loan nowadays, it is going to be more challenging than it was 2 years ago, because the government, the Fed, is pulling money out of the system. So the banks now are also tightening their belt. Another way to look at it is, you know, many of us have played the game Monopoly. We all start off with a certain amount of money in Monopoly. If all of a sudden everybody got double the amount of money to start with, which is essentially what we did by printing all this money the last several years, you'd buy a lot more and you'd pay a lot more for that item because you could. Now all of a sudden they're pulling that money back out. Now all of a sudden it's like, oh, I got to be more careful with this money because it's not free flowing yet. So that's another aspect that we are seeing. So let's talk about, how does this impact 7E? Because I think it's important to note, because we do get asked a lot, oh, the banks are in trouble, bank stocks are crashing, we sell shares, does that mean our stock is going to go down, or how does that impact our stock? And first, tell everyone, we're not a bank. We don't have, you know, deposits. We're not originating loans at 3% or 4%. Now, I was speaking to somebody the other day and kind of trying to explain it in layman's terms, and the best way someone put it, they're like, oh, so you're like a company that buys furniture or something, and when you're driving by and you see going out of business, everyone obviously is going out of business, mattress or, you know, furniture stores, they're going out of business, meaning they got to liquidate and sell it at a discount. Then you can buy it and turn around and make money off of that, whether you create something new or resell it. And that's actually to me, I thought it was a pretty good analogy of buying stuff that's going out of business, at a going out business sale, to then for us to repurpose it and acquire it. And, you know, for us on distress loans, work with the borrower to get them on some type of modification or program if we can, then turn around and sell that back on the secondary market to other investors. So I want to explain that to people because I thought that was really important to discuss, because there's a lot of information flowing out there about what's going on. And some of it's accurate, some of it is not accurate. I want to let people know that for us, what's going on in that banking industry and them, these loans and so forth, is something that give us more opportunity in the future. Hope all of this made sense to everybody. I do want to thank you. This is a wrap for another episode of the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. Thank you for joining us on this journey to unlock the full potential of your financial future. We hope today's insights have opened your eyes to some new possibilities, helping you take a closer look at your dream of generating passive income Also, gaining control over your money, hopefully being able to cure for a comfortable retirement. As somebody who also has a 401k, self-directed IRA, I'm always looking for investments as well that have low risk and provide me that passive income. Just always remember, the path to financial freedom, it isn't a straight line, but with the right guidance and mindset, you can make it a reality. But make sure to like us on your favorite listening station, whether it's Spotify or wherever you listen to us. Thank you all. Have a good day.
Thank you for joining Lauren and I on this episode of the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. Each week, we bring you expert education, experience, and information in a digestible format to help you identify investment opportunities so you can build wealth through real estate and take action toward your financial goals. Enjoy the show, share with a friend, or subscribe to the show, and leave us a review.